You are listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. The following podcast contains adult language, adult situations, and spoilers for the movies discussed occur often. You've been warned. Now, take it away, Dr. Rausch.
They must be destroyed on sight.
Hello guys, welcome to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight, intermission number 49. I'm Lee Russell. This is a bit of a sadder intermission, I guess, in a way. Roger Corman just died. Never mind that, I'm just sitting here with my window open because it is a warm spring day. Roger Corman died, aged 98. Not shocking, but shocking at the same time, because you look at the guy in interviews, and sure, he was definitely getting more frail physically in the last few years, but his mind was still there, and the very direct, concise way of speaking that he put forward, he was still on point. He still remembered all the facts, all the details of making this picture with this person, and how much money this picture made for us, and what we were able to make with the money for that picture, and where this person went on, and what to do, and all that kind of stuff. Like, just an endless font of film knowledge. An outsider, really, too. A guy who kind of broke into the business through hard work and dedication, and worked his way up through the business. You know, working under Samuel Ziarkov in AIP, becoming a producer and director there. Then he had his film group production company to make productions outside of AIP. Eventually went on to do New World Pictures, Millennium Films, New Horizons, and eventually Concord Pictures. And I'm sure there was a couple other little companies here and there that he was responsible for. And you just kind of think about the reach this guy had. It's unbelievable. Like, it's hard to really just fathom how many movies he's been involved in, like I said, personally and indirectly. And just the people that he helped break into the business or gave them, you know, a place to work and grow and develop their craft, even if it wasn't the first thing they did. But a lot of people just, you know, got starts with him, really, and credit him for helping launch their careers. I mean, I have a few names written down here, and that's kind of not even scratching the surface. Robert De Niro, Bruce Dern, David Carradine, Charles Bronson's first movie, technically, was a Corman thing. Sylvester Stallone, Ellen Burstyn, Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Dick Miller, Jack Nicholson, Francis Ford Coppola, Jack Hill, Sandra Bullock, Peter Bogdanovich, Martin Scorsese, believe it or not, Jonathan Demme, Monty Hellman, Paul Bartel, Ron Howard, James Cameron, Alan Arkush, John Sayles, Jim Wynorski, James Horner. Like, just that's just scratching the surface of the amount of people that this guy helped get their start. Whether they, you know, remember it fondly or not. Because, you know, there's definitely people who did not like Roger Corman, did not like the way he did business, thought he was a penny-pinching cheapskate and a kind of a real hard-nosed kind of boss who was like, you got to get a picture done for this much money and this much time. But, you know, there's other stories that the guy was also a great collaborator who was like, he saw trends in movies before they even happened. You could argue he created trends in movies and capitalized on them, right? So, you know, like, if in some cases, if a movie needed a tweaking, like some young person under him is making the new sex comedy for Corman, oh, we don't want to do it this way anymore, like Rock and Roll High School. It was originally going to be like disco Disco High or whatever the fuck, and someone had to clue Corman into the fact that Disco's kind of dead now, dude. We might want to put something else in there, and then you get the Ramones. That kind of thing. Like he was a practical, seemingly a very practical kind of guy who went the way the wind blew as far as like making money, because that was the bottom line for him, making money. Sure, art came out of that as well as a byproduct of that. There couldn't help but come out of that, considering the amount of talented people that sort of he worked with or worked under his stead. But you know, also a great director in his own right, did a bunch of schlocky to really good pictures. Like he's got 56 credits directing. Sometimes that was just him like coming in uncredited at the time to help finish a picture that he was producing or something along those lines. But he did do a lot of directing. Stuff like Five Guns West, The Day the World Ended, Attack of the Crab Monsters, Machine Gun Kelly, Bucket of Blood, House of Usher, of course, Pit in the Pendulum, Little Shop of Horrors, The Great, The Intruder with William Shatner, The Haunted Palace, X, The Man with the X-Ray Eyes, Mask of the Red Death, Tomb of Lygia, The Trip, Bloody Mama, Death Sport, Frankenstein Unbound, which is his last one, which I think is an unfairly shit upon movie as well, by the way, just putting that out there. I think there's a lot of cool shit in Frankenstein Unbound, even though it was kind of a flop at the time. But not only is he a great director, like I said, producer, executive producer, whether is you see his name in the credits or not, there's a lot of stuff he was just responsible for that he produced uncredited. Countless, like over 400 films, I believe, are in some way, shape, or form touched by him. You know, like Dementia 13, Targets, Dunwich Horror, Big Dollhouse, Big Birdcage, Cockfighter, Death Race 2000, of course, Fighting Mad, Hollywood Boulevard, Piranha, Rock and Roll High School, like I mentioned, Battle Beyond the Stars, Humanoids from the Deep, Galaxy of Terror, Slumber Party Massacre series, Forbidden World, Screwballs, Warrior and the Sorceress, Chopping Mall, Deathstalker 2. I would mention Deathstalker 1, but I think Deathstalker 2 is the one to watch, honestly. The rest of that series is kind of crap. The Nest, Not of This Earth. He produced the superior remake of that with Tracy Lords in the 80s. Just all kinds of stuff. I went through the list of things we've covered that are, like, directly or indirectly connected to him. I think I found pretty much everything. I might have missed a couple things. I probably did miss a couple things. But if people are interested and they want to, you know, hear about some of the movies he was involved with, episode 24 of this podcast, we did Not of This Earth from 88, the remake. Like I was just talking about there a moment ago. We did two early pictures that Corman were involved with. We did his very first movie, Five Guns West, from 1955. And a movie he produced in 55, The Fast and the Furious, which is where the Fast and the Furious franchise gets his namesake from. Most people don't know that. But we covered those both in a episode where we were talking about Dorothy Malone, who had recently passed away at the time. That was episode 119. 156 of They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. We did The Intruder with William Shatner. Episode 238, we did Fly Me, which was a sex comedy that he was just a producer on. And of course, we covered Rock and Roll High School in episode 259. Episode 262, we did Chopping Mall. So if you wanted to check that stuff out, if you hadn't already, just some of the stuff, okay? I'm not a biographer, but Roger Corman's movies greatly affected my life. I feel like anyone who's like a Gen X or a millennial grew up watching his stuff, especially, whether they knew it or not. And he helped shape pop culture, helped influence... also just ripped off a lot of really popular stuff and made cheaper versions of it. But people kind of are sometimes dismissive, like, oh, all the stuff he produced was just garbage. Like, look at the last 30 years of his stuff, and most of it's just crap. I don't think that's true. I feel like there's a lot of stuff in there that has value, has merit. You do have to do a little bit of digging, of course. But I feel like, you know, just some of the stuff I've mentioned here on this episode, worth checking out, everything I've kind of, like, mentioned here. And there's still a ton more stuff out there, too. And, of course, there is a lot of crap, too. Like, when he was, like, remaking a lot of his films in the 90s, those are all pretty bad. But, you know, the guy knew how to cash in on his brand. He was getting older, and he was basically just selling... selling the rights to his stuff to people, which was a smart idea. Yeah, so rest in peace, Roger Corman. I don't know, I feel like I should prepare it a little better for this. I feel like I'm rambling a little, and I'm sorry if I am. But, I just felt like we needed to say something right away about Roger Corman. I think we're going to have more episodes... soon, regular episodes where we'll do a couple Roger Corman films. The next episode of They Must Be Destroyed on Sight is going to be covering opera, Argento's opera, and we're going to have some guests on for that. But after that, I'm going to try to start lining up a few Roger Corman themed episodes as a tribute to the man and his legacy. And the Blood on the Tracks episode for this month has been retooled on the fly and is going to be a look at scores and soundtracks from Roger Corman adjacent films or films Roger Corman directed. So there you go. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and talk about a couple other films just to pad out the episode a little bit so you're not, you know, listening to me talk for only 15 minutes or whatever. So we'll be right back, and I'll talk about a couple films I've watched recently, and then we'll end the episode.
We got this, man. We got this by the ass.
Hello, and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I'm Richard.
And I hate the burning.
Shh, who are you? Speak.
And I'm Brad.
She came in and said, bark, bark, bark. And he said, bark, bark, bark. And she said, bark, 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 bark. That's what I got.
One is the Suspiria boner. The other is the Inferno boner.
Which one is crying? The boner of tears.
Hello, This is the Doomed Show is available on hellodoomedshow.podomatic.com and doomedmoviethon.com.
Hello, hello, this is the Doomed Show. Richard, Brad, Jeffrey, Naffa.
It's the Doomed Show.
Hello,
hello,
this is the Doomed Show. Slashers, G.I. Lo, and horror.
It's the Doomed Show.
We got this, man. We got this by the ass.
We'll be right back.
All right, talking about what I've watched in the last little while. First thing I'll mention, doing my usual movie night thing that I've mentioned before, where I screen movies for my friends, and I pick movies for them that they haven't seen before, or sometimes movies they've seen, but not for quite a while, but usually it's weird, psychotronic, or just, you know, genre stuff that they haven't seen before, and see what they think of it. And we did Raw Force from 1982, directed by Edward D. Murphy, which is batshit insane. I feel like it's the American Raiders of Atlantis in a way, just because it's so crazy and off the wall with the ideas it has. It's weird tonally because it starts out like a kind of a kung fu action film, devolves into a cruise ship segment that becomes a sex comedy, then it turns into martial arts action again, then it turns into horror stuff with undead zombie martial arts masters who are disgraced or whatever, living on this island, and you got these crazy monks, and it's just incredibly nuts. If you haven't seen it, I think most people who enjoy bad movies have seen it at some point by now, right? But I think it's mostly successful too. It makes no sense. The acting is almost terrible across the board, really, but it all works. It all kind of flows kind of well. Even though with the big tonal shifts, I still kind of enjoy them just because they're entertaining. And it's got Cameron Mitchell, who's just like comfortably sliding into that later part of his career where he just would show up for like 5 minutes and shoot a couple of scenes and then disappear into a bottle somewhere. And you can tell he's pretty much drunk the entire production. I'm glad that there were blanks in the gun that he was firing off in several scenes, because if there weren't, he probably would have killed somebody. But he... tries. I was going to say he tries. He does stuff in the movie, which is more than you can say for a lot of the stuff that Cameron Mitchell would be doing on the downslide of his career, right? This is still decent Cameron Mitchell, I guess. Fun Cameron Mitchell. It's like, oh, here's a cruddy kind of Z-grade flick that has Cameron Mitchell in it, but Cameron Mitchell makes the film better, if you get my drift, instead of just like dragging it down or sitting behind a desk and reading lines, you know? And there's plenty of blood, there's plenty of titties, it's got a little bit of everything, it's a great little exploitation thing, and everyone enjoyed it. And I paired that with 1988's Zombie 3, which is definitely a movie that should not work as well as it does. Originally directed by Lucio Fulci, he stepped out halfway through. There's conflicting reports as to whether it was his health or other reasons. But then Claudio Fragasso and Bruno Mattei jumped in and completed it and made it real fucking fun. There is some of that Fulci weirdness in there that is noticeable, but then you definitely notice where Bruno Mattei and Fragasso kind of took over and turned it into this action zombie splatter picture with all these crazy shit going on. I feel like that one is a real kind of style over substance kind of picture too, in a lot of ways. And it's probably one of the best Mattei films, really. Cause it does the same thing as like Hell of the Living Dead does, just in a much more streamlined way. I feel like he's kind of just doing Hell of the Living Dead again. And it's just good fun. If you want a gory Italian zombie flick with crazy shit in it, Zombie 3 is a way to go. I think it's also known as Zombie 2 in some places, whereas, you know, the original Fulci Zombie was Zombie in Italy. So I think this is credited as Zombie 2 sometimes, and it's pretty damn good. I enjoy it. It's just weird. It's a weird film, but in all the good ways. And it's got a real kind of bleak ending, as these things tend to do. And they ripped off Platoon. They ripped off Platoon for the ending, which is credit to you guys. You ripped off Platoon, and it wasn't that bad. Another one I showed my friends, Black Belt Jones from 1974, directed by Robert Close, who did a bunch of interesting martial arts stuff, both good and bad, and just action stuff in general. I know he did some like work with Bolo Young late in his career. I think his last film, Ironheart, was a Bolo Young vehicle. But he most famously, he did Enter the Dragon. He completed Bruce Lee's Game of Death after Bruce Lee's death, changed the storyline and some of the characters and all that shit. So it's kind of a mishmash, kind of chopped up film, but he did it. He also did stuff like Darker Than Amber, which is really fun. It's a film I like. It's an adaptation of a Travis McGee novel written by John D. MacDonald. I think I just mentioned this in a previous episode somewhere, didn't I? Did I not? Blood on the Tracks. That's right. One of the recent Blood on the Tracks. I had some from the score on there, but it's got a great fight scene in it. Rod Taylor and William Smith just beating the living fuck out of each other, which is really, really good. He also did Gymkhana. So, like, he did so where he did some, like, really great sort of action and martial arts stuff, he also did some lesser films, let's just say, right? Everyone enjoyed that, too, because it's just Jim Kelly doing pretty good. Like, they sort of hide all his weaknesses. Because, you know, Jim Kelly wasn't necessarily a great actor or anything like that, but they structured the film in a way to put, like, really good, fun actors around Jim Kelly. All Jim Kelly had to do is just beat the shit out of people, and does a pretty good job of it, fairly convincingly. I think the only thing this movie needed was some nudity. There's like one shot of a bare ass, and that's about it. It needed a little bit more exploitation, I think. But other than that, real fun film, good action film, breezes right through real quick, and Jim Kelly just beating the fuck out of idiots, essentially. Good stuff. One more film I'll mention. I watched Abigail, which came out in 2024, the new horror movie. I'm going to spoil some things here, so if you don't want to hear that, you can just cut off right now, and I'll bid you farewell. But it's essentially a remake of Dracula's Daughter from the 1930s. It's a very loose remake, though, but it's basically kind of the same concept. Abigail's this little girl, the titular Abigail, who is this ballerina dancer, and she is kidnapped by this team of ne'er-do-wells, underworld figures and such, who have criminal pasts and are trying to make a quick buck by abducting her. Because her father is a very, very rich man. And as it turns out, her father is kind of a Kaiser Soze character in the criminal underworld. So there's a little bit of Usual Suspects blended into this. Pretty successfully, I would argue. And it kind of balances its horror with its action stuff fairly well. And it injects quite a bit of humor into it as well. I was legitimately laughing in several places, and it's not, like, trying to be funny. It's just kind of organically funny, the way it's played. As it turns out, Abigail is a vampire, and there are some double crosses, and there's some treachery involved. I will not say who lives or dies in this one, but it was fun. It's a fun little ensemble piece with some good actors and some fun twists. Lots of blood. I love how the vampires die in this film. Very, very cool. It's worth checking out. It's a good little genre piece in 2024 that's well worth checking out. I had no complaints with it, really, other than, you know, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, a world-beating, amazing, Oscar-worthy film or anything like that. It was just a really well-made little genre picture with some nice twists and turns. And I came out of it quite satisfied. I liked it. And the little girl who plays Abigail, really good actress. And I love how they kind of to take a couple little swipes at the recent film Megan, because, of course, Abigail is a ballerina, so she can do spooky-ass creepy dancing, too. And she does quite a bit more of it in this film, as she taunts her prey later on in the film. So that's really cool, too. I like that shit. So worth checking out. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, Roger Corman soundtracks and scores will be the next Blood on the Tracks. In a few weeks, we'll be doing some sort of Roger Corman content. I just got to put those shows together. We'll cover some Roger Corman movies. And I'll also mention, if you listen to the Grind Bin podcast, I'm on the latest episode there for Day of the Cobra. We had fun talking about that. The Enzo G. Castellari, Franco Nero, Polizio Teschi film from 1980. Also has Sybil Danning in it. We had a good conversation about that. That one's a lot of fun. I'll put the link down in the show notes for you for that. And yeah, rest in peace, Roger Corman. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back when we're back. Goodbye.
Been listening to They Must Be Destroyed on Sight. For further episodes of this podcast, please go to tmbdos.podbean.com. Thank you. Drive through.